This is the Pearson EdExcel International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, June 2021. This test is in four parts, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the end of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all four parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. Section A. In this section, you will hear five short extracts in which people are talking about their volunteering activities. Read the list of activities below, then listen to the extracts. For each question 1 to 5, identify which activity A to H is being described by each speaker by marking a cross for the correct answer. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. Not all activities are described, and each activity may be used more than once. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Speaker 1.
I have developed a lifelong love of books, as well as an appreciation for learning and reading. I organize the bookshelves, putting books back in their correct order. I like to advise borrowers on what books to choose and reserve books if they are not available. I also help with community events, like school reading schemes and used book sales.
Speaker 2.
I am surrounded by some of the most beautiful works of art, and I have learned something about them. I love helping out with family programs and children's activities. I work mostly in reception, selling tickets, but I hope that once I have built up enough knowledge about the works of art, I can become a guide.
Speaker 3. I am good at information technology and want to put these skills into good use. I enjoy volunteering at our local community centre, teaching the senior citizens how to perform computer tasks, simple or more complex. All are very keen to learn and often tell me that no one has ever taken the time to teach them computer skills before. Speaker 4.
Sometimes children need a little help with their schoolwork, such as reading. This is where I can help. I take groups of children for reading or helping with their homework after the school day. The children enjoy coming as they feel motivated to do well, and I am often inspired by how hard they work and the progress they make.
Speaker 5.
What I do involves more than just clearing up litter after visitors. People often ask me about the plants and trees that we have. I need to know the history of where they come from, who introduced them to the park, and how we look after them. I particularly enjoy helping with planting for each new season.
Now listen a second time and check your answers. Speaker 1.
I have developed a lifelong love of books, as well as an appreciation for learning and reading. I organize the bookshelves, putting books back in their correct order. I like to advise borrowers on what books to choose and reserve books if they are not available. I also help with community events, like school reading schemes and used book sales.
Speaker 2.
I am surrounded by some of the most beautiful works of art, and I have learned something about them. I love helping out with family programs and children's activities. I work mostly in reception, selling tickets, but I hope that once I have built up enough knowledge about the works of art, I can become a guide.
Speaker 3. I am good at information technology and want to put these skills into good use. I enjoy volunteering at our local community centre, teaching the senior citizens how to perform computer tasks, simple or more complex. All are very keen to learn and often tell me that no one has ever taken the time to teach them computer skills before. Speaker 4.
Sometimes children need a little help with their schoolwork, such as reading. This is where I can help. I take groups of children for reading or helping with their homework after the school day. The children enjoy coming as they feel motivated to do well, and I am often inspired by how hard they work and the progress they make.
Speaker 5.
What I do involves more than just clearing up litter after visitors. People often ask me about the plants and trees that we have. I need to know the history of where they come from, who introduced them to the park, and how we look after them. I particularly enjoy helping with planting for each new season.
That's the end of Part 1, Section A. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Section B. In this section, you will hear a person giving advice about becoming a volunteer. For questions 6 to 10, listen and answer the questions below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
When you choose to become a volunteer, you are offering your time, talents, and experience. You are also getting so much in return: confidence, skills, and the satisfaction of helping others. You could be a friendly face to a patient in hospital, help run a lunch or social club, or share your skills, such as using a computer. Whatever your something special is, we will match you with the best volunteering opportunity. We at the Royal Voluntary Service are here to help find the right role for you. Whether you have something specific in mind, want to create your own activity or group, or have never considered volunteering before, we are here to help you. There are no fixed hours, and we do everything we can to support you. From giving you a full induction and training to just being there for a friendly chat, we'll make sure you have everything you need to make your volunteering a success. We have been helping the National Health Service since it was created, and we rely on volunteers to continue this support. Whether you can improve a patient's experience or provide help to our staff and visitors in one of our shops or cafes, there is a role for you. Anyone can volunteer. While many people choose to volunteer after they have retired, it is a great way for students to gain experience. We know that our volunteers do their best work when they are making the most of their talents. Whatever it is, volunteering your talent can change someone's life for the better. Volunteering is about giving the gift of your time, talent, and skills so that you can make a difference to the people in your community. If you have not done anything like this before, we have an experienced team of people ready to help and support you.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
When you choose to become a volunteer, you are offering your time, talents, and experience. You are also getting so much in return: confidence, skills, and the satisfaction of helping others. You could be a friendly face to a patient in hospital, help run a lunch or social club, or share your skills, such as using a computer. Whatever your something special is, we will match you with the best volunteering opportunity. We at the Royal Voluntary Service are here to help find the right role for you. Whether you have something specific in mind, want to create your own activity or group, or have never considered volunteering before, we are here to help you. There are no fixed hours, and we do everything we can to support you. From giving you a full induction and training to just being there for a friendly chat, we'll make sure you have everything you need to make your volunteering a success. We have been helping the National Health Service since it was created, and we rely on volunteers to continue this support. Whether you can improve a patient's experience or provide help to our staff and visitors in one of our shops or cafes, there is a role for you. Anyone can volunteer. While many people choose to volunteer after they have retired, it is a great way for students to gain experience. We know that our volunteers do their best work when they are making the most of their talents. Whatever it is, volunteering your talent can change someone's life for the better. Volunteering is about giving the gift of your time, talent, and skills so that you can make a difference to the people in your community. If you have not done anything like this before, we have an experienced team of people ready to help and support you.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear a person giving advice on how to get a good night's sleep. For questions 11 to 18, listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words for each answer. Questions 19 and 20 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
We spend about one third of our lives asleep. We need sleep to help us function, concentrate, and develop both mentally and physically. Sleep is incredibly important for our health. In fact, it is just as beneficial as eating healthily and exercising. Therefore, it is vitally important to ensure that we all have a good night's sleep. Unfortunately, today's modern environment is interfering with our natural sleep patterns. People are not only sleeping less than they did in the past, but the quality of sleep has decreased. Many sleep problems are caused by stress. So it is important you take time to relax before you go to bed, whether it is reading a book or playing soothing music. Perhaps writing a list about all the things you need to do tomorrow can help free your mind from worrying. Ban your smartphone, computer, and television from your bedroom and avoid looking at them an hour before you go to bed. If your routine consists of reading, use a traditional book, not an e-book. Electronic devices of this kind emit a blue light that lowers the level of the sleep hormone, melatonin, and so keeps you awake, even though you may feel tired. Make sure your bed provides the correct support, comfort, and space. Ensure that your room is the right temperature. Between 16 and 18 degrees Celsius is the best temperature. A lack of clutter and a tidy room with a fresh, pleasant smell, like that of lavender, can also help create a calm and restful setting. Worrying about getting enough sleep can itself stop us from sleeping well. The best way to deal with this is to remind yourself that resting in bed and thinking nice thoughts is more productive than tossing and turning and looking at the clock every 10 minutes. Try turning the clock around to face the wall, or even putting it in a drawer so it's not easy to watch time ticking away. Eating healthily improves sleep generally, but some foods are particularly good, such as tofu and pumpkin seeds. They contain chemicals which are vital for the production of melatonin, the hormone that promotes sleep. On the other hand, spicy foods and large meals should not be consumed in the hours before bedtime. For many, drinking coffee or other drinks containing caffeine in the late afternoon can affect sleep. Sugary food in general is bad because the energy spike you get can badly affect your body clock. Research has shown that if you do not sleep well, you tend to eat junk food the next day, creating a cycle of poor sleep and bad diet. We all know that having a routine helps babies and children fall asleep at a certain time. This applies to adults as well, because it allows your body to program itself to fall asleep naturally and wake up at certain times. Try to be strict about going to bed at a regular time and create your own relaxation routine. Before clocks, people would wake when the sun rose and go to sleep when it got dark. Similarly, a darkened room helps to promote sleep, and turning down the lights can make you sleepy. If you are disturbed by street lights outside your window, make sure your curtains are tightly closed. Physical activity, particularly out in the fresh air, is great for sleep, as well as for your health generally. Many people spend a lot of time and effort exercising and making sure they eat healthily, which is great, but they should not forget that sleeping is as important as the other two.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
We spend about one-third of our lives asleep. We need sleep to help us function, concentrate, and develop both mentally and physically. Sleep is incredibly important for our health. In fact, it is just as beneficial as eating healthily and exercising. Therefore, it is vitally important to ensure that we all have a good night's sleep. Unfortunately, today's modern environment is interfering with our natural sleep patterns. People are not only sleeping less than they did in the past, but the quality of sleep has decreased. Many sleep problems are caused by stress. So it is important you take time to relax before you go to bed, whether it is reading a book or playing soothing music. Perhaps writing a list about all the things you need to do tomorrow can help free your mind from worrying. Ban your smartphone, computer, and television from your bedroom and avoid looking at them an hour before you go to bed. If your routine consists of reading, use a traditional book, not an e-book. Electronic devices of this kind emit a blue light that lowers the level of the sleep hormone, melatonin, and so keeps you awake, even though you may feel tired. Make sure your bed provides the correct support, comfort, and space. Ensure that your room is the right temperature. Between 16 and 18 degrees Celsius is the best temperature. A lack of clutter and a tidy room with a fresh, pleasant smell, like that of lavender, can also help create a calm and restful setting. Worrying about getting enough sleep can itself stop us from sleeping well. The best way to deal with this is to remind yourself that resting in bed and thinking nice thoughts is more productive than tossing and turning and looking at the clock every 10 minutes. Try turning the clock around to face the wall, or even putting it in a drawer, so it's not easy to watch time ticking away. Eating healthily improves sleep generally, but some foods are particularly good, such as tofu and pumpkin seeds. They contain chemicals which are vital for the production of melatonin, the hormone that promotes sleep. On the other hand, spicy foods and large meals should not be consumed in the hours before bedtime. For many, drinking coffee or other drinks containing caffeine in the late afternoon can affect sleep. Sugary food in general is bad because the energy spike you get can badly affect your body clock. Research has shown that if you do not sleep well, you tend to eat junk food the next day, creating a cycle of poor sleep and bad diet. We all know that having a routine helps babies and children fall asleep at a certain time. This applies to adults as well, because it allows your body to program itself to fall asleep naturally and wake up at certain times. Try to be strict about going to bed at a regular time and create your own relaxation routine. Before clocks, people would wake when the sun rose and go to sleep when it got dark. Similarly, a darkened room helps to promote sleep, and turning down the lights can make you sleepy. If you are disturbed by street lights outside your window, make sure your curtains are tightly closed. Physical activity, particularly out in the fresh air, is great for sleep, as well as for your health generally. Many people spend a lot of time and effort exercising and making sure they eat healthily, which is great, but they should not forget that sleeping is as important as the other two.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an interview with a journalist who has decided to give up using her mobile phone. For questions 21 to 25, listen and answer the questions. You do not need to write in full sentences. Questions 26 to 30 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark the new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hello, and welcome to our fortnightly programme on how technology affects our daily lives. When did smartphones become such an important part of our lives that we cannot cope without them? They seem to have taken control of our lives in a way that makes me feel as if I am being bossed about by them. So, my colleagues and I have decided to launch a smartphone-free fortnight and challenge you to see how long you can manage without the mini-computer that seems to be so much a part of your life. To encourage you, we have on the programme an interior designer and journalist who has actually quit her smartphone addiction and really started living, as she herself puts it. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, and thank you for having me on the programme. Like you, I really don't like being bothered and bossed around. I hated that anyone, for any reason, could interrupt my life by phoning, and I could interrupt mine just the same by taking the call. I felt I needed to take matters in hand.
Okay, that sounds good. But suppose a friend wants to get in touch and visit you or have a meal out. What then?
Well, look what happened recently to me. A friend rang on my landline checking to see if I could pick her up on the way to a party. I asked her where she was, and as she explained, I reached for a pen and scribbled down the address in my trusty notebook, which I always keep close by. I told her I'd be at her place in about 20 minutes. Then I put the phone down. Literally.
What exactly do you mean when you say literally put the phone down?
I physically took the handset receiver away from my ear and placed it on the weight-triggered switch that cuts off my landline's dial tone. I then took my laptop and checked the address to get better directions. I took my notes and headed outside to my car and drove over to my friend's house.
That sounds all well and good. What would have happened if you had got lost on the way? What if she changed her mind and she couldn't make it? Or you had an accident on the way? Surely you were being a bit unwise going out without your mobile.
If I got lost, I would have needed to ask someone for directions. There are plenty of petrol stations and shops on the way to do that. Should she have changed her mind, she wouldn't have been able to ring me at a moment's notice and cancel. She would need to think of the fact that she cannot get in touch with me.
It sounds as if you have the situation under control. Well done. How long have you been without a smartphone?
I haven't had one for over 18 months. I decided there was to be no mobile phone in my life, in any form whatsoever. No downgrading, no simplifying to a less sophisticated phone. I opted out completely.
But arguably, you should have one. After all, you are a freelance writer and a popular designer, and clients would want to get in touch.
There are a dozen ways to contact me between the landline, email, and social media. When I check in or answer my phone, it's on my terms. No one can interrupt whatever I'm doing. To me, it's as liberating as the first night of a holiday.
Surely, people thought you must have been old-fashioned, to say the least. Exactly why did you ditch the phone?
I cut myself off because I felt my life was better without a mobile. I am less distracted. It makes me feel as if my life is richer. When my friends found out, they thought I was wrong and must be going mad. But I was tired of my world existing through a small black screen, and even more tired of being contacted whenever anyone felt like it.
This is something we are all aware of, yet somehow don't manage to resort to such action as you did. I find it a bit drastic.
I can only speak for myself when I say it was becoming an addiction. I was constantly checking emails, social media, daily news, or playing games. When I found out that I could download audiobooks, the earbuds never left my lobes. I even slept with it by my side. It was never turned off. I'm sure I've texted during meetings, in dark theatres, and went out with friends around a restaurant table. I felt obliged to answer every text, tweet, and social media comment.
So, you have been without a mobile for a year and a half, and you appear to be doing well. You get plenty of work, you have a social life, and have time to yourself. I think this is amazing in a world of constant and instant communication.
Yes, and I sleep better too. My business and social life have not vanished. Basic internet is enough to keep friends informed and weekends fun. I'm glad to be back in touch with the real world again.
This is very impressive. Okay, listeners out there, we have a fortnight to try this experiment, and then I look forward to hearing from you in 2 weeks' time, either by email or letter. No texts, please.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hello, and welcome to our fortnightly programme on how technology affects our daily lives. When did smartphones become such an important part of our lives that we cannot cope without them? They seem to have taken control of our lives in a way that makes me feel as if I am being bossed about by them. So, my colleagues and I have decided to launch a smartphone-free fortnight and challenge you to see how long you can manage without the mini-computer that seems to be so much a part of your life. To encourage you, we have on the programme an interior designer and journalist who has actually quit her smartphone addiction and really started living, as she herself puts it. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, and thank you for having me on the programme. Like you, I really don't like being bothered and bossed around. I hated that anyone, for any reason, could interrupt my life by phoning, and I could interrupt mine just the same by taking the call. I felt I needed to take matters in hand.
Okay, that sounds good. But suppose a friend wants to get in touch and visit you or have a meal out. What then?
Well, look what happened recently to me. A friend rang on my landline checking to see if I could pick her up on the way to a party. I asked her where she was, and as she explained, I reached for a pen and scribbled down the address in my trusty notebook, which I always keep close by. I told her I'd be at her place in about 20 minutes. Then I put the phone down, literally.
What exactly do you mean when you say literally put the phone down?
I physically took the handset receiver away from my ear and placed it on the weight-triggered switch that cuts off my landline's dial tone. I then took my laptop and checked the address to get better directions. I took my notes and headed outside to my car and drove over to my friend's house.
That sounds all well and good. What would have happened if you had got lost on the way? What if she changed her mind and she couldn't make it? Or you had an accident on the way? Surely you were being a bit unwise going out without your mobile.
If I got lost, I would have needed to ask someone for directions. There are plenty of petrol stations and shops on the way to do that. Should she have changed her mind, she wouldn't have been able to ring me at a moment's notice and cancel. She would need to think of the fact that she cannot get in touch with me.
It sounds as if you have the situation under control. Well done. How long have you been without a smartphone?
I haven't had one for over 18 months. I decided there was to be no mobile phone in my life, in any form whatsoever. No downgrading, no simplifying to a less sophisticated phone. I opted out completely.
But arguably, you should have one. After all, you are a freelance writer and a popular designer, and clients would want to get in touch.
There are a dozen ways to contact me between the landline, email and social media. When I check in or answer my phone, it's on my terms. No one can interrupt whatever I'm doing. To me, it's as liberating as the first night of a holiday.
Surely people thought you must have been old-fashioned, to say the least. Exactly why did you ditch the phone?
I cut myself off because I felt my life was better without a mobile. I am less distracted. It makes me feel as if my life is richer. When my friends found out, they thought I was wrong and must be going mad. But I was tired of my world existing through a small black screen, and even more tired of being contacted whenever anyone felt like it.
This is something we are all aware of, yet somehow don't manage to resort to such action as you did. I find it a bit drastic.
I can only speak for myself when I say it was becoming an addiction. I was constantly checking emails, social media, daily news, or playing games. When I found out that I could download audiobooks, the earbuds never left my lobes. I even slept with it by my side. It was never turned off. I'm sure I've texted during meetings, in dark theatres, and went out with friends around a restaurant table. I felt obliged to answer every text, tweet, and social media comment.
So, you have been without a mobile for a year and a half, and you appear to be doing well. You get plenty of work, you have a social life, and have time to yourself. I think this is amazing in a world of constant and instant communication.
Yes, and I sleep better too. My business and social life have not vanished. Basic internet is enough to keep friends informed and weekends fun. I'm glad to be back in touch with the real world again.
This is very impressive. Okay, listeners out there, we have a fortnight to try this experiment, and then I look forward to hearing from you in 2 weeks' time, either by email or letter. No texts, please.
That's the end of part three. Now turn to part four. Part four. In this part, you will hear an extract from a scientific radio program about unusual animal behaviour. For questions 31 to 33 and 38 to 40, listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than three words for each answer. For questions 34 to 37, complete the table. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
As part of my research on animal behaviour during unusual planetary occurrences, I found myself in Vicuña, in Chile, during a solar eclipse. The city was within the path of a total eclipse. The sun, the moon, and the earth, in that order, move into perfect alignment, cloaking everything in darkness. For just 140 seconds, the moon rolled in front of the sun. The sunlight went out, and the air suddenly turned cold. The humans cheered and clapped, while flocks of birds began to panic, their timeless routine disrupted. I was here to observe the birds, not the eclipse. For most animals, the structure of their day, and indeed their year, depends on the light-dark cycle and the moon's regular journey from full moon to full moon over 28 nights. These regular and rhythmic cycles in the length of days and nights tell animals when they should be foraging, when they should be asleep, when it is time to migrate, and when it is time to breed and raise their young. Animals can tell all this from how many hours of daylight they have and the levels of light, or rather darkness, they experience at night. But what happens to animals when the moon or the sun does something unusual or unexpected, such as an eclipse? Of all the cosmic events, the solar eclipses prompt perhaps the biggest change in animal behaviour. Puzzled animals that are active during the day head back to their nighttime abodes, while nocturnal animals think they have overslept. A solar eclipse occurs when the sun, moon, and earth are aligned on the same axis, so the moon completely blocks the sun. Around the world, unusual incidences of animal behaviour are observed and reported while everyone else is watching the eclipse. Some spider species begin to break down their webs during an eclipse, as they typically do at the end of the day. Once the eclipse has passed, they begin to rebuild them. Similarly, fish and birds that are active during the day head for their nighttime resting places, while nocturnal bats appear, seemingly tricked by the sudden darkness. Hippopotami in Zimbabwe were observed leaving their rivers during an eclipse, heading towards their nocturnal feeding grounds on dry land. Midway through their departure from the water, the eclipse passed, daylight resumed, and the hippos cut short their efforts. The animals appeared agitated and stressed after the eclipse for the remainder of the day. A lunar eclipse happens when the moon, earth, and sun are very closely aligned, with earth positioned between the two. As the moon passes directly behind us, earth blocks sunlight from reaching the moon, causing a reddish glow to appear. These so-called blood moons can only appear where there is a full moon, so it's difficult to separate the impact that lunar eclipses have on animals' reactions compared to a standard full moon. A study in 2010 discovered that a species in Argentina, known as the owl monkeys, which are typically nocturnal, did not start to forage during a lunar eclipse, as their world became very much darker. They may have struggled to see their food, as their eyes had not had time to adapt, or felt too unnerved to move safely through the trees. Around three times a year, a supermoon occurs, when the full moon is at its closest to the Earth. The moon's distance to Earth varies throughout the month, because its orbit is not a perfect circle. When a supermoon event occurs, the moon is about 46,000 kilometers closer to the Earth than during the period in its cycle when the moon is furthest from Earth. During a supermoon, light levels are about 30% brighter than at any point in the moon's cycle, and it appears much brighter in the sky. A recent study found that wild geese responded to these supermoons while overwintering in Scotland. Small devices which measure their behaviour were fitted to the animals. Researchers found that the geese's heart rate and body temperature increased at night during supermoons, when typically at this time of night, they would have been subdued. The birds didn't respond to supermoon events when the moon was covered by very heavy cloud and the night stayed dark. It appears that, a bit like with humans, the bright light of a supermoon woke the geese up, causing their heart rates and body temperatures to increase potentially in preparation for daytime. For centuries, mankind has been fascinated about the relationship between human behavior and the lunar cycle. Many folklores and fables are connected to our interactions with the moon, the most extreme example being that of mythical beasts that roam the world when a full moon is shining. It was once believed that the lunar cycle influenced a range of strange changes to a person's behavior and that of wider society. For example, many believed that levels of argumentativeness and aggression were influenced by the moon. The word lunacy, still used to describe extreme recklessness, comes from the Latin word lunaticus, meaning of the moon. A series of scientific studies published about 30 years ago found that there was no concrete evidence of any link between the lunar cycle and human behavior. The moon's influence on us might remain the stuff of legend and myth, but the confusion it sows among wild animals is very real indeed.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
As part of my research on animal behavior during unusual planetary occurrences, I found myself in Vicuña, in Chile, during a solar eclipse. The city was within the path of a total eclipse. The sun, the moon, and the earth, in that order, move into perfect alignment, cloaking everything in darkness. For just 140 seconds, the moon rolled in front of the sun. The sunlight went out, and the air suddenly turned cold. The humans cheered and clapped, while flocks of birds began to panic, their timeless routine disrupted. I was here to observe the birds, not the eclipse. For most animals, the structure of their day, and indeed their year, depends on the light-dark cycle and the moon's regular journey from full moon to full moon over 28 nights. These regular and rhythmic cycles in the length of days and nights tell animals when they should be foraging, when they should be asleep, when it is time to migrate, and when it is time to breed and raise their young. Animals can tell all this from how many hours of daylight they have and the levels of light, or rather darkness, they experience at night. But what happens to animals when the moon or the sun does something unusual or unexpected, such as an eclipse? Of all the cosmic events, the solar eclipses prompt perhaps the biggest change in animal behavior. Puzzled animals that are active during the day head back to their nighttime abodes, while nocturnal animals think they have overslept. A solar eclipse occurs when the sun, moon, and earth are aligned on the same axis, so the moon completely blocks the sun. Around the world, unusual incidences of animal behavior are observed and reported, while everyone else is watching the eclipse. Some spider species begin to break down their webs during an eclipse, as they typically do at the end of the day. Once the eclipse has passed, they begin to rebuild them. Similarly, fish and birds that are active during the day head for their nighttime resting places, while nocturnal bats appear, seemingly tricked by the sudden darkness. Hippopotami in Zimbabwe were observed leaving their rivers during an eclipse, heading towards their nocturnal feeding grounds on dry land. Midway through their departure from the water, the eclipse passed, daylight resumed, and the hippos cut short their efforts. The animals appeared agitated and stressed after the eclipse for the remainder of the day. A lunar eclipse happens when the moon, earth, and sun are very closely aligned, with earth positioned between the two. As the moon passes directly behind us, earth blocks sunlight from reaching the moon, causing a reddish glow to appear. These so-called blood moons can only appear where there is a full moon, so it's difficult to separate the impact that lunar eclipses have on animals' reactions compared to a standard full moon. A study in 2010 discovered that a species in Argentina, known as the owl monkeys, which are typically nocturnal, did not start to forage during a lunar eclipse, as their world became very much darker. They may have struggled to see their food, as their eyes had not had time to adapt, or felt too unnerved to move safely through the trees. Around three times a year, a supermoon occurs, when the full moon is at its closest to the Earth. The moon's distance to Earth varies throughout the month, because its orbit is not a perfect circle. When a supermoon event occurs, the moon is about 46,000 kilometers closer to the Earth than during the period in its cycle when the moon is furthest from Earth. During a supermoon, light levels are about 30% brighter than at any point in the moon's cycle, and it appears much brighter in the sky. A recent study found that wild geese responded to these supermoons while overwintering in Scotland. Small devices which measure their behaviour were fitted to the animals. Researchers found that the geese's heart rate and body temperature increased at night during supermoons, when typically at this time of night they would have been subdued. The birds didn't respond to supermoon events when the moon was covered by very heavy cloud and the night stayed dark. It appears that, a bit like with humans, the bright light of a supermoon woke the geese up, causing their heart rates and body temperatures to increase potentially in preparation for daytime. For centuries, mankind has been fascinated about the relationship between human behavior and the lunar cycle. Many folklores and fables are connected to our interactions with the moon, the most extreme example being that of mythical beasts that roam the world when a full moon is shining. It was once believed that the lunar cycle influenced a range of strange changes to a person's behavior and that of wider society. For example, many believed that levels of argumentativeness and aggression were influenced by the moon. The word lunacy, still used to describe extreme recklessness, comes from the Latin word lunaticus, meaning of the moon. A series of scientific studies published about 30 years ago found that there was no concrete evidence of any link between the lunar cycle and human behavior. The moon's influence on us might remain the stuff of legend and myth, but the confusion it sows among wild animals is very real indeed.
That is the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklet to be collected. Thank you and good luck.